bend it back into shape. The first time she'd met with Yeoman, he'd given her back the earring. It had seemed like a strange move, giving metal to an allomancer. Yet in a controlled environment, it had been very clever. He'd been able to test and see if she had any hidden metals, all the while reserving the fact that he could burn atium and protect himself. Later, he'd been able to get her to reveal her hand, to attack and show him what she was planning, so that he could defuse it in a situation where he was in power. Could she do the same to Ruin? That thought mixed with another one. Both times, when the mists had helped her, they had come in a moment of pure desperation. It was as if they reacted to her need. So was there a way to put herself in a situation where her need was even greater than before? It was a thin hope, but, mixed with her desire to force Ruin's hand, it formed a plan in her head. Put herself in danger. Make Ruin bring his inquisitors, putting Vin in a situation where the mists had to help her. If that didn't work, maybe she could get Ruin to play his hand or spring any hidden traps he had waiting for her. It was incredibly risky, but she could feel that she didn't have much time. Ruin would win soon, very soon, unless she did something. And this was all she could think of to do. But how could she make it happen without explaining it to Elend? She couldn't speak of the plan, lest she reveal to Ruin what she was doing. She looked up at Ellen, a man she seemed to know better than herself. He hadn't needed to tell her that he'd reconciled the two halves of himself. She'd simply been able to tell it from looking at him. With a person like that, did she even really need to speak her plans? Perhaps. "Elend," she said, "I think there's only one way to save this city."
"And that is," he said slowly.
"I have to go get it." Elend frowned, then opened his mouth. She looked into his eyes, hoping. He paused.
"The atium?" he guessed.
Vin smiled. "Yes. Ruin knows that we have it. He'll find it even if we don't use it. But if we bring it here, at least we can fight."
"It would be safer here anyway," Elend said slowly, eyes confused but trusting her. "I'd rather have an army between those riches and our enemies. Perhaps we could use it to bribe some local warlords to help us."
It seemed a flimsy ruse to her, and yet she knew that was because she could see Ellen's confusion, could read his lies in his eyes. She understood him as he understood her. It was an understanding that required love. And she suspected that was something that Ruin would never be able to comprehend.
"I need to leave then," she said, embracing him tightly, closing her eyes.
"I know."
She held him close for a few moments longer, feeling the ash fall around her, blow against her skin and cheek, feeling Ellen's heartbeat beneath her ear. She leaned up and kissed him. Finally, she pulled back, then checked her medals. She met his eyes, and he nodded, so she jumped down into the city to gather some horseshoes. A few minutes later, she was shooting through the ashy air toward Luthadel, a maelstrom of metal around her. Elend stood silently behind on the rock ledge, watching her go.
"Now," she thought to Ruin, who she knew was watching her carefully, even though he hadn't revealed himself since she'd drawn upon the mists. "Let's have a chase, you and I."
When the Lord Ruler offered his plan to his ferrochemist friends, the plan to change them into mistwraiths, he was making them speak on behalf of all the land's ferrochemists. Though he changed his friends into Chandra to restore their minds and memories, the rest he left as non-sentient mistwraiths. These bred more of their kind, living and dying, becoming a race unto themselves. From these children of the original mistwraiths, he made the next generations of Chandra. However, even gods can make mistakes, I have learned. Rashik, the Lord Ruler, thought to transform all of the living ferrochemists into mist wraiths. However, he did not think of the genetic heritage left in the other Terrace people, whom he left alive. So it was that ferrochemists continued being born, if only rarely. This oversight cost him much, but gained the world so much more.
68. Sazed walked in wonder, led by his guards. He saw chondra after chondra, each one with a more interesting body than the one before. Some were tall and willowy, with bones made of white wood. Others were stocky, with bones thicker than any human's. All stuck generally to human body shapes, however. They used to be human, he reminded himself. Or at least their ancestors were. The caverns around him felt old. The pathways were worn smooth, and while there were no real buildings, he passed many smaller caverns, varied drapery hanging in front of their openings. There was a sense of exquisite craftsmanship to it all, from the carved poles that held the fungus lights to the very bones of the people around him. It wasn't the detailed ornamentation of a nobleman's keep, for there were no patterns, leaves, or knots carved into the stonework or bones. Instead, things were polished smooth, carved with rounded sides or woven in broad lines and shapes. The chondra seemed afraid of him. It was a strange experience for Sazed. He had been many things in his life, rebel, servant, friend, scholar. However, never before had he found himself an object of fear. Chondra ducked around corners, peeking at him. Others stood in shock, watching him pass. Obviously, news of his arrival had spread quickly, otherwise they would have just assumed him to be a chondra wearing human bones. His guards led him to a steel door set into a large cavern wall. One of them moved inside, while the other guarded Sazed. Sazed noticed shards of metal twinkling in the chondra's shoulders. They appeared to be spikes, one in each shoulder. Smaller than Inquisitor spikes, Sazed thought, but still very effective. Interesting. What would you do if I were to run? Sazed asked. The chondra started. Can I assume from your hesitance that you are still forbidden to harm, or at least kill, a human? Sazed asked. We follow the first contract,